Morning, everyone.
Good morning, yeah. It's like 8 o'clock or something.
Yes, it's 8 o'clock. I woke up at about 6 o'clock this morning getting ready.
Wow.
And I'm having my cup of coffee still.
Good morning, Anne. Good
morning. Well, is everyone back there? I can't see everyone.
Hello.
Strange.
It's great.
Yeah.
Okay, so how is everyone today? And have you had other people speaking, or what have you been doing today?
Oh, we all had two beautiful days. I think everybody's a little bit tired, but, but it has been great. We just had a little circle conversation before now, and just discussing all the topics. It's really, really good. And we had an interview with Solrete Antaria this morning, which was also really good, and James yesterday, and so it's been great, yeah, really. So we're looking so forward to this.
Okay, well, I just before you called, I was getting myself all ready, and I thought, you know, even though I've done this so many times, I always get just a little nervous, just before.
Yeah, you know we love you. Don't worry.
Yeah.
So you had a great conversation, and I take it that everyone does. Everyone or many of the people that are there, do they know that they're very involved in ufology?
Yes. Yes, they know a lot about the topic. Yeah. And about and they're also experiencers and So you could, if when you start, you can just briefly give, you know, talk about you and how it started, just briefly. But most of us are familiar with it, yeah.
Okay, and how many people are there?
At the moment, it's not 16. That many.
See, we're not.
But 16.
Well, that if it ends up being that, it means more time for each of us to speak with one another. Well, I'm okay with that. I'm ready to dive in, and I hope that we can make this a little bit casual, so that we can have a great conversation back and forth.
Yeah.
Because for me, the most enjoyable part of doing this work is being able to talk to people and be able to hear, you know, their thoughts and their questions and their concerns and this type of thing. So as we go along, that's what I'm looking forward to with everyone.
Yeah, great.
Sounds so wonderful.
So I'm going to mute the mic on our side, Miriam. So and try to switch, turn it on again.
Okay. Thank you. So, first of all, I have to say thank you for inviting me, because it was an interesting little story that I'm not sure that the people attending know, but many, many years ago, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago at least, wasn't it, Tatiana, that we connected?
Yes.
And I remember looking at her in the picture and thought, and from the way that she wrote to me, I knew that in the future we would be doing something together. And so I completely forgot about that, of course, because I have a lot of people contacting me. And it was the invitation that came, and I thought right away, without even really researching fully and looking into everything, I said yes in my mind, I was going to do this conference. So there's always some deeper connection. We'll get into that as we go along. So, again, thank you to everyone sitting back there. I can see some of you, and I'm really honored when people come out to hear my story and to talk about this very important subject, because I do believe that it's one of the most important subjects on the planet today. Absolutely. And I've said that for 30 years. So before we get into some of the finer details, I'll give you a bit of an overview of of my history so that we can have more of a deeper discussion as we move along. So as I'm sure that you know that you read my bio, my name is Miriam Delicato, and I live currently in really far north in British Columbia, Canada. And this is my hometown where I grew up, and this is also part of my story about how I interacted with tall, blonde, blue-eyed extraterrestrials. So, starting at the beginning. Take a deep breath. The big story. You know, when I was 22 years old, I was like any other normal, average 22-year-old, living life, exploring life. I had recently moved from my small town into the city in Vancouver, Canada. And, you know, I was going out with friends every weekend, dancing, having fun, living a normal life. But at the same time, there was always a unique aspect to my life, and that had been with me since childhood, and that was that I was very psychic. I was very connected. And I have a really long history with that since very, very, very young. My family, for example, always listened to me when I would tell them things. Well, I shouldn't say always. Family never listens always. But they always listened to me when I went to them with some kind of a vision. Because initially, of course, they disregarded them. But over time, when I would come to them with a vision or a dream or a feeling, wow, they listened. And on several occasions, especially with my older sister, she's 4 years older than me, there were a number of incidents as I was younger that proved that I was gifted in this way. So my family always knew that about this. And some of my very, 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 very close friends also knew. But at the same time, I was so different that I kept it hidden as well from the average person, of course. So I was a 22-year-old average girl with these gifts, just so that is thrown in right away, because it's very important as we go along in the story. So when I was 22, I was living in Vancouver, and there's so much detail to this story that I really do hope that each one of you will go to my website and download the free PDF of the book and read it, because it's 186 pages, I think, and it's a really great short read, but it's jam-packed with information that I will not be able to get into all the details here today. So I will leave some things out, and if you want to know more of the details, you can read the book, okay? So I was 22 years old, living in the city, and I just recently was out of work, and I was living with someone at the time, and I had this very profound dream, what I thought was a dream, of this man and this woman coming to me, and I couldn't remember what they had said to me, which was really odd, but it was so real to me, and it was rather almost hypnotic, where I woke up from this and immediately packed my bags and left this man that I was living with and went and moved in with my friends. And within a couple of weeks, they said, let's go home for a few days. So we got in the car and we drove all the way up to my hometown in northern British Columbia. And we stayed there for a few days over the weekend. And then we came home. Now, I'm often asked whether or not I do drugs, and I did not do any drugs. I was drinking the night before, and I was hungover. I admit that. I had too much to drink. But that is not what happened here. And I write about that in the book as well, because I think that our, and I will interject here by saying that it is extremely important that when we talk about this subject, that we not leave out details, that we put all of the truth into the facts of what took place, so that we can find more and more answers as we go along in the subject matter. It's really important for us to do that. So we got into a car, and there were four adults and a child in the car, and we drove, and it's a very long drive. And we had done this several times in the past, and it took a set number of hours to drive. We always had one driver. We always drove almost straight through with the man who normally drove sleeping for 3 hours on the side of the road. And that was it. Other than that, we're going crazy driving down the road. And that was it. So we did the same thing. And as the day turned into night, I was in the back seat sleeping. And I had this very, very, very strange dream again, where this man and this woman, they were in long white robes. One had blonde hair, one had dark hair. I don't know if I've ever told that to the public before. The man had dark brown, almost black hair, and like sort of down to here. And they spoke to me. And behind them, it looked like the moon behind them, a big ball of light, looked like the moon in this vision. And they said to me, and I quote, "Do not be afraid. We are coming for you soon. We are your friends. We are your family. Do not be afraid." So I woke up in this dream, shaken to my core, because, and I just got shivers all the way through my body, because it was so real. It was as if something had happened. But again, I'm with people, even though I'm with them, they didn't really, they knew about the psychic stuff, for sure. And they knew that I'd been experiencing something strange, but I couldn't tell them what was going on. Okay, there was no way I could say anything. So we transferred from, I transferred from the back seat to the front passenger side, and a woman started driving. So the two people got into the back, they fell asleep. Shortly after we started driving, we noticed that some lights were coming up behind us, and it looked like big balls of light, like big headlights or something. And it would travel the road behind us very, very, very quickly. And we thought it was a big truck or something, some kind of a big, I don't know, truck, because it was slightly higher than normal, and they were slightly bigger than normal. But every time we went through a small town, because we're in Canada, there's a lot of open space that we have here, especially back then, you know, 30 years ago, there was even more than there is now, for sure. But there was a lot of open space. And every time we went through past a house with lights on or anything like that, these two headlights, let's call them, would fall back and disappear. And then as soon as we got through the town or past the house, they would come up behind us again. This went on for hours. Every time the lights came up behind us, the radio station would come on. And just one moment. I'm on a do not disturb, so I don't hear the bouncing from Skype. And so the radio would turn on, and it would be this very strange radio station from the southwest of the United States. It was from somewhere, I believe, in New Mexico. It was Albuquerque or Santa Fe or something like that. And we commented about that. We were talking about how weird that was. And then, all of a sudden, you know, we went through these towns. We were getting very nervous, both of us, because we didn't know what was happening. And we drove through this town. And it's a really long stretch, so you could see behind, like, quite a ways, maybe a mile to, or a mile and a half, straight back. And then as soon as you turn this corner, you're basically in forested area again. And we did that. And the second that we rounded the corner, She said, I said to her just before we rounded the corner, I said, there's no way that they can catch up with us now. There is absolutely no way. We even ran red lights through that town after midnight or whatever it was. It was just after midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, sometime around there. It had to have been around that time, yeah. So that is the moment that life changed for me. That's the moment that determined every breath I take for the rest of my life, what my thoughts were going to be, because that's the moment that it happened. We rounded the corner. I said, there's no way that those lights can catch up to us, that person can catch up to us. And I blinked, and boom, two lights right behind us. And the driver's screaming at me, and she's going crazy, okay? She's like, what the bleep, bleep, bleep is going on? You told me that they weren't there. And I said, they weren't, and then I blinked and they were gone. And then I blinked and they came on. And then they followed us. And she was screaming, what do they want? Who are they? Maybe they're trying to kill us. What should we do? You know, it was terrifying. It was frightening. And then for whatever reason, I started screaming at her, saying, pull over the car, pull over the car, pull over the car. And she said, no, 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 they're going to kill us, and we don't know who they are. And I said, pull over the bleep, bleep, bleep car right now. It's not you they want, it's me. Now, it's like a subconscious and conscious melding that was taking place. I was saying things and thinking thoughts and seeing things, but I didn't. It's like my brain wasn't quite grasping what was happening. We pulled over the car. Everyone in the car went silent and still. It's 30 years, and I've told the story a thousand times already, and it's still hard. It's still hard. It's still hard. Because it was so powerful. And we pulled over the car, and everyone else in the car got very still, almost like a suspended animation, you know? And it was surreal. And then I turned around to look at the lights behind, and they were about this big and very bright balls of light, about this far from the bumper at the back of the car. And then I turned to the front of the car, and there was a very small, there was a small UFO sitting on the road that was sort of engulfed in mist. And from the mist came these little beings that were, they're not, when you say grays, there are different definitions of grays, so let's be clear about that. They weren't the wrinkly skinned ones, which I find scary. These were almost robotic in nature, and they had round black eyes and big foreheads, you know, little pointed chins, that kind of thing. And I heard them saying, do not be afraid, we will not harm you. Do not be afraid, we will not harm you. Do not be afraid, we will not harm you. Get out of the car, step out of the car, do not be afraid. And this just kept going through my head. Do not be afraid. And I wash my hand as I'm getting out of the car. These beings come around to the side, pant, side of the car at the door. They take me by the hand. They felt freezing cold, like a pop can, soda can. I don't know what term, in the United States they say soda, here we say pop, like a, you know, Pepsi or Cola, okay? And then that's how cold they felt. And I walked down the road, and then on the left-hand side was a huge UFO with the door open, and I walked up a small embankment, and then at the doorway, I was greeted by these two tall, blonde-haired, blue-eyed beings. Now, they were rather androgynous, and yet I still knew that one was male and one was female. Don't ask me how, because man, they just about looked exactly the same. So it was odd that I even knew that. As I'm going up the hill, I heard them, I in my own mind said, what are you doing here? Why won't you leave me alone? And then the fight in my brain, why am I saying that? What is going on? So my brain was trying to reconnect to past events. I was taken on board the craft, and I was put into a chair that was made of light. People often ask if I had something put on my head. I did not. In front of me was like a holographic screen where images and information was placed. And at the same time, I was also able to communicate with these two beings standing on either side. And they downloaded me with, massive information, inconceivable amounts of information. The only way that I can describe it is as if whatever they showed me, I experienced. It wasn't just like watching your television set looking at an image. No. If they showed me death, which they did, and we'll talk about that, the potential destruction of the world and what could happen in the future, they showed that to me. That still motivates me to this day to do whatever I can to support the planet and to support humanity in this transitional time. It wasn't an intentional torment to me. It was a gift. But unfortunately, these gifts are sometimes not easy to accept or to understand or to deal with. And there's the mirroring effect of the gift was to see the potential or possible future destruction, but they also showed me the utopia. So I walk with both of those in my heart and in my mind. But I still have a hard time looking at that image that they showed me. And I still can see it as clearly as I did then in this moment 30 years later. And they explained physics and how the universe works. They talked to me about the beginning of Earth, and they talked to me about the human soul and why we're here. Not everyone, but most of us. Why most of us are here on the planet. They talked about their role in the formation of the Earth. They spoke about how we as a species are sort of veiled, as they say. You know, we're asleep, and why we are asleep. And it's rather painful for me to hear people say that the reason why we are asleep is their fault. And it kind of is. But understanding the way that we evolved as humans to begin with and the destructive world that we created in the last world, which many people attribute to Atlantis, that is part of the reason why we are veiled. And now the awakening process is slower. Rather than giving us all the information right now, giving it to us and dumping it into our brains the way that we had it during the time of Atlantis, as an example, this time we are slowly going through the awakening process. And then they talked to me about how our position within the universe itself as a planet. And this is kind of it's so complex because I can only share it in terms that are simple, and it's not at all simple, but the way that everything is set up, we are in constant motion and movement as an energy source of the planet. And as we move, we sort of encounter different energies. And it's like walking, taking a walk. At some point you're going to feel the breeze of the trees, and the next time, you know, you're going to be sheltered from the trees. And there's all of these different things that we can experience as we're moving through space and time, or the concept of space and time. And as this is happening, they said that solar flares would begin to affect not only the planet, but also the human body, which in turn creates the connection with the brain, which in turn connects to the spirit and the soul. So it's all one big line of information that they shared with me. Now these beings, I asked them, I specifically remember asking them if they were God. Because I think you would. I think anybody would, because of what they were sharing with me, and also because of the way that they were. It was very, they were very angelic, but very frightening at the same time, because they were so powerful. And there was nothing hidden within me that I had done or seen or thought or anything. They had access to me. And this was a physical encounter. Absolutely 100% physical encounter. The people that were in the car with me, so the three adults, one of them I don't speak with. One of them, who was the driver, remembers very odd things about that night. For example, that she was freezing cold, that there's just things that she can't quite put together, you know? And she told me years ago, she said to me that she couldn't stop thinking about that night, that there was something there. The guy, the man that was driving, he also said that he's never been able to let go of that night, but he knows that something happened. And then a few years ago, he contacted me and told me that he started having memories come back that were terrifying. And, you know, to be honest, I felt pretty bad. Because what can I do? Sorry. That's something that's been bothering me lately. You know, just thinking about that. Anyway, because you can't help someone to get to come to terms with them. So you can't help someone. You can guide them, you can give them support, but you can't really take someone's brain and say, yeah, this is what's going to happen and you're going to be okay, you know. You have to come to terms with it, because it confronts every belief system that you ever had. And I mean every belief system. The belief system of Not the concept of God. I think that's the easy one. God is what every single individual conceives it to be, is God. So that's easy. You conceive God to be nature, great. You conceive it to be, you know, one way or another way. It's easy to get through. The hard part in this is understanding the responsibility as a human being of why we're here. The hard part is conceiving that we are connected to something far greater than what we initially thought. And it awakens your mind to recognizing that the systems that we have created here are not set up to fulfill that soul and spirit level, and that confronts us every day. And spiritual people, or especially people that are interested in UFOs and extraterrestrials, are castaways of society, because we I think understand more than any other group what interconnected means. And so we struggle with that as individuals, try and find other people who look at this subject with that same level of curiosity, with awe, with wanting to know more about who we are, truly who we are, not who we want to be. Because who we want to be is something very different than who we actually are. And this is where conflict comes in. With spirituality, with religion, with education, with everything that we experience here. And that is the clarity that these beings shared with me. Because I walked off that UFO. And just before I left, these beings, never forget it. Because they have really, they're very tall. They're like 7.5 feet tall, almost 8 feet tall. They're huge. They're huge. So their heads are huge. Their faces are, you know, in proportion, right? And they leaned down over top of me as I was leaned back a little bit, and they leaned over me. So one face here and one face here, and they said, "You will remember this. You will remember." Well, I walked off that craft, and I remembered. I started to... It's like a slow release. Kind of. Because I walked off the craft and I immediately knew that something was different and something was going on, because I saw the beings on the side of the road, and I was trying to tell the people in the car, "No, look, no, look, they're not deer. They're not deer. Look at them." And what's that house with all the floodlights on, the big lights? So they obviously stopped my memory from me grabbing it at that moment. But when I got home, I locked myself in my room for weeks, months, and was writing. And I was completely different. They know. The people there know. I was different. My family knew that I was different. That's an interesting story in itself and worth reading the book for, because it's short, it's simple, but it's packed. So the reaction of everyone around me, my personality changed, I even looked different. I even looked different. And I was, what is it, I was 5'3¾". And then when I walked up the craft, I was 5'5". So I gained 1¼ inches overnight. So this was not an astral contact, which many people have. This was not a contact that was from a distance, which many people have. This was not a dream contact, which many people have. This was a come down in a physical UFO, pick me up, take me away, bring me back situation. And I want to be very clear about something. And this is, I think, the biggest for me. This is the number one, misunderstood concepts within ufology today, is who's having physical contact like this. And I will tell you something. I do not believe that there are very many people who are having physical contacts like this. I do not believe that. I do not believe that the thousands of people that are on there saying that they're having all of these contacts are having physical contacts. I have spoken with two other individuals that I absolutely 100% know have physical contact. And I have had discussions with the two of them, and because I've talked to them about this, and they completely agree, and they've said that, you know, if you have physical contact, it changes everything immediately, 100%. There's no transition time. You're done. One day you're one person, the next day you're something else. You're an awakened soul immediately. There's no turning back. Whereas with the astral contacts, there's a time of confusion and you go through things, but you can still maintain a certain level of normal life, I think, in a sense. Not diminishing astral contact, but because astral contact is and can be just as traumatic or life-altering and changing as physical, but the physical contacts are not as predominant in the world as what people think. That's my opinion. So, what happened was these beings told me very specifically that I had a job to do, and they asked me to take care of that, to fulfill that job. And what they wanted me to do is basically is to tell the world about them and to tell the world about the spiritual aspects of who and what we are, and to educate people on this phenomenon in a way that is clear, as I said, not as some people say, woo-woo. Does everyone get that term, woo-woo? Okay. Because there's a lot of woo-woo. And woo-woo is awesome, because that's spirituality. But we have to also keep it in relation to the world that surrounds us. We can't become so disjointed that we're not productive and that we're not helping and supporting society, which is what they are talking about. Have to drink a little coffee. So, what happened was, they really gave me a massive amount of information, and I walked off that craft understanding physics in a way that I think even today, if I were to sit down and actually study physics terminology, and I were to take some physics classes, I could probably tell the scientists what to do. But I don't have the language for physics. But when I have spoken to a number of physicists in years, just in casual conversation, they're usually quite surprised at my level of knowledge and fascinated, because initially, within a couple of months of that experience, in 1988, I met a physicist who was working at the University of British Columbia doing tests on, I don't know, protons or neutrons or something. He was testing something with electricity. And I was saying to him, oh yeah, that's child's play. This is what's going to happen. And he said, how? So I was telling him what the reaction was and how he could change the reaction by doing certain things. And we got into a really deep discussion. He was, I don't know, blown away. He was completely blown away, because he said, how on earth do you know any of this? Because he said, scientists are just starting to look at this as research. He said, it's taken us years to understand this. And I was like, yeah, that's child's play. And he was really shocked. So that's, to me, that was my gift. That was my gift. To say, oh, yeah, this is not craziness, this is real. I had a lot of those. And again, worth reading the book, because I've had so much confirmation, and I'm fortunate that way, because my sister remembers an incident when I was 4 years old, and we both remember the incident, which is fascinating. I had an incident, I had memories from being a baby and them floating above me, because what happened was, when I was on board the craft in 1988, they gave back the memories to me from childhood, and then I had to confirm them somehow, but I had to blindly confirm them, meaning no leading people to hear what I wanted to hear. No talking to them about, I had to know. So I did get that confirmation. It was mind-boggling. I got the confirmation from my sister from when I was 4 years old. I had the confirmation from my father from when I was a baby. There's five members of my immediate family at the time. My mother, my father, and myself and my two sisters. My father was out of town. When I woke up, I found my mother and my one sister talking at the kitchen table, saying that they'd had a dream that a UFO landed in the backyard. I said, oh my God, I had the same dream. And then we waited for my other sister to wake up, and then we looked at her and just said, did you have a dream last night? Yes. Well, what was the dream? She said, I had a dream that a UFO landed in the backyard. So that was when I was about 9 years old. So we're talking when I was a baby, when I was four, when I was nine. When I was 16, I had some really, I have a memory of being out on a logging road with my boyfriend at the time and his friend, and seeing a meteor, two meteors that came down out of the sky, and then before they hit the earth, they all of a sudden started going parallel to the earth, you know. So I have all sorts of confirmations like that, you see. And then again, when I was 22, I was awakened, and I mean fully awakened. I truly believe that my experience is somewhat unique, because I didn't remember this from hypnosis. I remember this because I remembered. That's the first thing. I think also because they gave me so much detail that one day, more of my story will be told. And I think it will shock people, because the level of precision of information that they gave to me is shocking even to me. It's shocking. I don't know sometimes how I can function, and I'm being very honest, because in being here at the conference, I was asked to be very clear about the reality of this and what it means for us and why it's important. And it is a very heavy burden at times for me to walk through life knowing what I know and knowing that it's true. There was a time in, gosh, how long ago now? 2004 was the year. So 1988 until 2004, I was still thinking quite often that I was absolutely crazy. It took me that long. And then I had a whole bunch of incidents happen in a row, and I looked at my friend and I said, that's it. I'm done. I will never question my sanity again. This is real. It happened. I will never question, and I haven't. And I think that that's been a good thing for me, because it took a lot of my energy to fight it, to, you know. I'm not talking about the same thing as coming to terms with the coming to peace, being at peace with it. That's something else. I'm talking about truly, fully, 100%, without any doubt, without any question whatsoever, knowing that every single memory that I have of regarding this is real. And that is profound in itself, because you reach into something within yourself that it's like opening doorways and having access to concepts of an understanding of the reality of life that is not even teachable. You cannot even convey that. And I know that almost all of us within this field of knowledge, within the UFO community, within the extraterrestrial community, whether we are searching for something or whether we're searching for something or whether we've experienced something, we have this profound connection to one another. That's one of the profound, amazing, incredible gifts, is that Tatiana and I, without ever meaning, went, oh, there's something there. And there was an immediate connection. And the most fun about being at a conference for UFOs is you go there, and within 30 seconds, you have made the best friend for the rest of your life. And you walk away with this connection that can never be fully explained. And that is because we have an awareness of this interconnected world that we live in. Even if it's not conscious, we have that connection. And that's also why when people... can you excuse me for just a moment? Hold up. That's why when people are at conferences, we tend to stay up late and talk, because we're making that energy connection, not only up through our physical bodies, but through our spirit as well. Excuse me. So, that is extremely important for all of us within ufology to be mindful that we kind of are different. but we don't have to, our role is not to force that uniqueness onto others. Our role is to share the uniqueness with others. Very big point here, because I'm often asked by people, what can I do, what should I do? I know all of this. Shouldn't I be saying something to someone? Shouldn't I be doing all of this? And, just looking at the way that we interact with one another as human beings, we are role models, regardless of whether or not we want to be or not. And it's interesting, because people may stand back from us, but they are in awe of us, because we have something that they don't, because we understand something that they're just trying to grasp, or we have a calmness about us that they would like to have, or we have a strength within us that they would like to understand more for themselves. So in reality, we are, each one of us is a role model for our exterior world. And so we don't really have to force anything on anyone, but we do have these gifts. And because of the physics, the way this all works, I've explained it like this for 30 years, because it's the best explanation that I can come up with, and that is, when I walk down the street, I am, it's like shedding skin. I let droplets of my being, of my aura, let's say, okay, droplets, they drop out of me, and then they go into the, you know, into the air or the space around me. When an individual walks through that space, another being, whoever that is, they can either accept that energy or they can reject it. But it's there. But we do this to each other. Every single soul on the planet does this to each other. So it's not like we have control. Well, we can control it. But normally, under normal conditions, people do not control that type of energy. So we just let droplets go wherever we go. The more people within ufology that have woken up, as that community grows, it grows. If you take a look at the UFO community, when it expanded, proof what when it blew up, okay? If somebody were to do a study on this, this is what they would find. They would find that in proportion to the UFO community waking up and becoming public and doing things out here, the rest of the world awakens spiritually, and it's in proportion. Part of that is because as we awaken and as we start to learn something about UFOs and extraterrestrials and beings and spirituality, and this does reach into the spiritual world and the metaphysical world and all of that, it does also. But as each one of us is doing this and we're letting go of those, let's say, a little more evolved droplets of energy, meaning those droplets of energy contain more information. It's not that we're evolved and better. No. You can be evolved and be a horrible human. You can still do those. The mirror is still there. But we let those droplets go, and then as it enters into the world, it shifts the energy and awakens more and more and more people. So you're doing it. You're doing it now just by interacting with each other there. You're strengthening each other at these conferences and groups. You give each other energy back, lift each other up, then you go back out into the world, and then you experience again. So there's a lot of potential just in that alone. And if you're consciously thinking about it, not by shoving that energy into someone, but just saying, I share... Just, if you just sit quietly right now, just, you know, spirituality and the power of who we are as human beings is so powerful. The human being is the most powerful energy source of the planet, the most powerful being, because we have the ability to do so many things. And I prefer to keep things simple. I am not one of these people that says, okay, in order for you to be able to connect to your higher self, you must go through these 25 steps. No. No, 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 no. No. If I want to reach my higher self, I ask. I say... I ask myself with love and open arms and open heart and open mind to connect to my higher self. I give this gift to myself with love. Boom. You can connect. Whatever you feel in your heart, in your love for self, is what will open the doorways of knowledge. Too often within spirituality and within the UFO community, we shame each other. We are shaming each other. We are saying, you can't do that. You're not allowed to do that. No, you have to do it this way. No, this is the right way. It's very sad when people say, what is the right way to meditate? There is no right way to meditate. Some people do it through chanting, some through dancing, some through singing, some through laying down, sitting up, standing on your head, laying in water, going to sleep at night, waking up in the morning, having your morning. I mean, meditation is what you make it. So when I believe that that you both, that the two of you shared with everyone that I'm going to sharing my spiritual tools seminar, you talked to them about that. That spiritual tools seminar that I did, I'm so glad that I had the opportunity to do that because it's fantastic, really. I feel that it was a gift from them, honestly, because many of the people who have listened to all three parts of that spiritual tools seminar immediately are walking away saying, wow, I get it. They're saying immediately, I understand what I can do now to further my awakening and my opening. And many people have had immediate results, especially through their dreams. And immediately, a lot of people realize that they really are in touch with their higher self or their spirit guides, or that they're getting messages and things. All the spiritual tools seminar does is point you in the right direction. And that information is what these beings share. It's not about what the UFO looks like. Who cares? I mean, to me, that's like the least important thing, although it's interesting and it's fun. And what did it look like? Well, I'll tell you. It was almost sterile. It was sterile, you know? Very smooth walls and... I could see windows to see outside in certain rooms. There was an energy source in the center of it that I saw that I finally released some of those diagrams to the public at some point. Sorry. And that flew weeks ago now, and I'm still not 100%. It's a bad flu. I don't know if you have it over there in Europe, but over here, it's been knocking people out for like 6 weeks, 2 months. It's been terrible. So, there's a lot of information that these beings shared when I was on the craft. And I remember being in the main room with them, where all of the, I guess, pilots are and that sort of thing. And there was an energy source that was alive. It was some kind of energy that was actually a live, living thing. And it was like a ball of white light, energy that then connected to the consoles that was surrounding it, and then that's what powered the craft. So very, very interesting. And that's also was explained to me through physics, which then I talked to a physicist years later about how all of that works, and of course that's what the physicists are talking about now. So in two How many years ago? 2009, I believe it was. 2009. I was at a conference, and I met someone back then who I was telling the details about time travel and how it folds in on itself and how it travels through light and how the different... everything. I was telling them all the details through physics. And years later... I saw him, and again, and he was telling me, oh my gosh, he said, every single thing that you told me about time travel, they just wrote about, the scientists just wrote about and released, and it was years later. And I said, oh yeah, but that they're nowhere near being able to do, you know, with what they've written there. But I said, yeah, that's going along the right pathway to it. I guess why I'm sharing this is to say that the amount of knowledge that can be attained by simply opening yourself up is really what these beings want us to do. They want us to awaken. They want us to remember who they are. And they want us to be responsible for the earth and for each other and for all the life that we have here on the planet. And this is the number one priority for them. It is about being in service to others. It is about being in service to self. If I don't take care of myself, I'm no good to anyone else. And I work a lot, and I sometimes work too much, and people are always saying slow down. I don't think I'm a normal case. I've got a big job, so I'll just keep working. But really, we do have to take care of ourselves, and we have to love ourselves first. I mean, it really does come down to that. And when I think that we are coming to the point in our evolution as a human species that there's enough of us that are awake, that are aware of our reality not being quite right, that there's this big shifting taking place. You know, someone wrote on my Facebook wall just the other day that the world is so dark and that there's so many bad things happening. And I had this, I looked at it for the, how many times I've read that or heard that from people, but I came to a very profound conclusion, and that is, the world is no darker today than it was 50 or 60 years ago. The reality is, that enough of us have woken up to that fact. And that is a beautiful thing. So, is it really darker now than it was back then? I don't think so. I think that we have evolved to the point where even those who are not, who we would not consider to be spiritual, are also still clear enough to be able to see that our reality needs some adjusting. So we have come a very, very, very long way in the development of our existence. And we have to continue working on that. You know, as far as these beings are concerned, I've had a lot of encounters. Let me rephrase that. I've had a lot of experiences with these beings through all of the different modalities. The physical, I've seen the, what I call star orbs. Now, to be clear, these are objects that fly through the air that are physical, that look like a star that's moving. These are not what you capture by taking a photograph. Completely different. But I've had a number of experiences with star orbs, with the round balls of orbs that I've seen, with dreams that I've seen UFOs and the beings in the dreams. Very powerful, very powerful. I've had meditations where I've seen the beings. But recently, actually, I had, how long ago was that? 2 months ago, I think? No. Well, it couldn't have been that long ago. Yeah, it had to have been about 2 months ago. It wasn't winter. We live in Canada, so, you know, we still have snow and cold, and I was walking, so it was warm, and it was sunny, so it couldn't have been that long ago. Time, as you know, is completely shifted and changed for us as human beings as well. And that partly has to do with where we are in the universe. So my most recent experience was very, 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 very profound for me. because I physically saw one of the beings here in my little hometown. And that was a trip. That was crazy, because I was in shock and awe when it happened. Because it was almost identical to, in some ways, to when I was in Vancouver and I physically saw them in Vancouver. So, I was walking down the street here in my hometown, and I saw a truck approaching me, and this was a black truck, and I noticed it because it was spotless. It had not a speck of dirt on it. Now, my brain started to try to look at it and say, what is... You know, when we see things that we can't understand, our brain tries to figure it out. It first of all will take notice of it. Oh, there's a truck, and it's clean. Well, why am I looking at a truck, clean truck? Who cares? There's clean trucks everywhere, right? But this was clean. It was shiny. It was super, super, super shiny. The wheels were black. I mean, it was strange. And my brain was fighting itself. And then as the truck got closer and closer and closer, I noticed that inside the cab of the truck, it looked sort of misty-like. It was almost like there was mist inside the truck. And then again, my brain, you know, it happened very quickly. My brain was trying to figure it out. And then, once it got close enough, because I wasn't wearing my glasses for distance, I noticed that there was a being, an extraterrestrial, and I swear to you, an extraterrestrial behind the wheel of that truck. And as he went by, he just looked at me like this. And I was like, oh my God. And something like that happened to me in Vancouver in 2004, which was the determining moment for me that I would never question anything again. And because in that moment, I wasn't the only one to see that being. A little girl that was in the car with us at the time also saw the being and looked and pointed and said, oh my God, look at that man in the Jeep. He doesn't even look human. And I was like, that's it. That's it. No more questions. That's it. You know, when you're confronted with something like that, what are you going to do? So, there are so many great people all over the world working on this topic, attempting to find truth and find clarity and answers. We have to use caution not to become overwhelmed by the negative aspects of ufology, which I believe are important to know. But what I also know is that, as an example, Whitley Strieber, who talked about the Greys and how bad all of that was for a very long time, years later came to understand the spiritual aspects of what he had experienced. And we must use caution when we look at the subject, because when a person from the jungle in South America, an indigenous person, is snatched from the jungle and brought asleep into a hospital in North America because he needs a heart transplant, and wakes up in the middle of the heart transplant with men and women with masks on their faces and equipment everywhere, what is that indigenous person going to think? That they're the devil. That they're trying to kill them. And then they get taken and healed and fixed all up, and then taken back home and put back home. And all they have left is a story of the devil. So, in ufology, we have to have a level of caution in how we perceive information. And who, okay, just as important, who we allow to give us that information. And where is that information coming from? Is it coming from their meditation, which can be tainted? Is it coming from their dreams and visions? Anything can be tainted. Anything, even from me. So we have to ask ourselves first, does this feel right? Does this sound right? Just because there's something bad going on doesn't mean we need to go out and research every single last part of it so that we can protect ourselves. Makes me crazy when I hear about people in ufology talking about how we need to protect ourselves, and that's all that they're talking about. Yeah, we need to protect ourselves. We do. We need to understand dark energy. We need to understand how energy works. And we need to understand that what we do when we come across a bad person in our life, and we recognize that's a bad person, that's a bad individual, we need to not be associating ourselves with them. What can we do to get away? Well, there's no difference. If you meet an extraterrestrial that you don't feel good about, how do you get away from them? You know, you need to just tell them to go away. You need to use that common sense. All of those things do work. They do work. Don't be fooled, because you're powerful and you are in control. And so, saying that an entire race of being is all angelic and beautiful is wrong. Because just because the beings that I had contact with, the tall, blonde-haired, blue-eyed extraterrestrials, they are not all good either. And again, for the sake of clarity, these are not what they call the tall whites, which are very different. The tall whites are one race. What I call the tall blondes are a completely different race. And the tall blondes are highly evolved spiritual beings that helped to, what I call, terraform the Earth, and that they did so, I asked them, I said, do you know God? Do you know God? And they said, we seek to know God as you do, but we know and understand God more than you, but cannot explain it because you would not understand. So they take direction, I imagine that they take direction in a way that we do. So if we go into a deep meditation and we get a message from Creator, from Spirit, and we follow that, we become accustomed to that following, that's our connection. They do something similar. So for me, in this entire experience, I think that we have the ultimate responsibility to self first, to awaken ourselves. The more awake we become, the more we can support the world around us, even if it's just leaving our droplets everywhere. So, I mean, there's so many things that I could talk about and so many directions to go in, but I really want to talk to everyone and say hello, and I'm sure there's questions and comments and...
Oh, man. Thank you so much. That's been, yeah, it's really good. And we have a lot of questions.
I'm going to actually mute myself for a moment and then have a really good call.
Okay. Yeah.
But you, I will still hear you, so
yeah,
please
go. Yeah, great. Oops. We have been discussing a lot during the conference, especially about our role here on Earth. And oh my God, there's so many things here.
Let's start.
Great to start, yeah. Especially today we have been talking about the family aspect of the walk of Earth and the shift and how important it is.
Well, the feminine aspect of, you know, people have talked to me about the feminine aspect I'll just say this right off the top, because I'm a woman, in case anyone knows. really, one of the things that makes me, that I am a woman in a unique position within being a public person, okay? And I'm a woman who I think is a leader in some ways to a community. Not the leader, but I'm one of these people that, you know, I mean, I'm speaking at your conference, right? So I'm a leader in that way. When people talk to me about the feminine and we're coming into the feminine, what I found is this really interesting dynamic that's happening, and that is that a lot of men are talking about the feminine and how we're coming into the feminine, and then they control the women around them even more than if they weren't saying that. And I just, that is something that I want to say. Okay, because this moving into the feminine is a clash between masculinity and femininity to many people on a conscious and subconscious level. And when we talk about the feminine coming forward and that's where we're transforming into, I don't see it as being feminine, a feminine power. I see it as being an equal. And we have to get to that, because otherwise we are pitting ourselves against each other. So I think that to rephrase it, we could do more for ourselves if we said that it is about the feminine coming into balance with rather than coming into the feminine. Oh, the feminine are going to take over? The women are going to take over? No way, you know? Well, the women have a role, they have this. No way, we're not going to let that happen. So there's a fear that comes with anything that's unknown, and that even goes into this feminine and masculine energy that we're talking about. And it's interesting because I work with a lot of men. And I work with men that don't normally work with women in indigenous communities, for example. And that's tough. But they still value women just as much as they value men. But as women, I think we need to understand that it is not about taking a position of power. It is about taking our position, period. And women are leading, many women are leading the spiritual movement because there's such an imbalance. The men are controlling government and they're the managers and the guys in charge and the CEOs and all of these things. All we're doing is bringing it back into balance. So I think that we're not moving into the feminine. I believe that we're moving into the rebalance of the masculine and feminine. Yeah.
So, I totally agree. But I think what is important these days is to connect with the heart, because that's the way. I think that the masculine energy is talking a lot about nuts and bolts, but we need to go into the heart to make a spiritual approach to the contact with the peace and to ourselves. So,
Absolutely. Does anyone back there want to ask a question?
Do you know about Michel de Marquis' abduction to the planet called Tia Umba? It's a book, Abduction to the Ninth Planet.
No, I'm not familiar.
Because he was that planet for 9 days, and they was a very tall being, 3 meters high.
I think I heard something about this person. You know what? I think I remember some time back. Someone pointed me to this person. Is this the one where the planet is a very big ball of light?
It's called the Golden Planet. It's very big, bigger than the Earth, but the gravity is about 0.5 g, and it's much water and bigger, very much higher.
Yes, but when you look at the planet, it's a big globe of light almost, yes?
And it's golden,
Yes. You know, that's all that I know about the story, is what you have just said. And I feel a connection to that absolutely, because when I was with these beings, they showed me the planet, and that's what it looked like.
Okay, because in the early days they were involved in the Earth development, and I explained to the person who was at the planet.
Yes.
And then they were also experts in astral projection and were very spiritual high and developed. And the energy was so strong of the planet, so you could only be there for 9 days.
Yes, I would. Before you leave, would you get the information about this gentleman, about the man who had the contact, and send it to me, please?
Why can't make sure this might be?
Yes, we
can send it later.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. Yes, very... I connected with that information because of what he said the planet looked like.
Yeah.
And I was taken... again, I was probably not taken there. I wouldn't have been taken there. But through that... through that holographic screen, I had the experience of being taken to the planets and through the solar system and so forth. It was very interesting. And I was shown that planet, and that is where they're from. Yeah. So.
I was just wondering, because I understand that you were working in the garden yesterday.
Yes.
Yes. Great. Yeah. and one of the top topics of this conference has actually been the connection to nature and the connection to the plants and the mother earth. And then again, the connection to the Star Nation. Is this a way you work in your daily life to connecting the nature and the Star Nation?
I don't do anything, I don't do anything in a typical way. if I'm out in nature, I definitely will at times, really connect in with that. But I don't often do things on a very focused, conscious level. Because if we over-focus, then we are with blinders, and then we lose the connection, you see? So, for example, I will share with you how I was planting in my garden, okay? So, I'm planting a few weeks late, a couple weeks late, which for us here, because our growing season is so short, it's really important to get it into the earth. And I thought, oh. So I worked the soil and I said, oh, you're so beautiful. I just love you. I can't wait to give you some seeds. And I'm working the soil. And then as I'm working, I'm just speaking out loud, because speaking manifests from the other world into this world. And I'm just talking. Oh, can't wait to plant these plants. This is so beautiful. I'm so blessed to have this earth to work with. Thank you, sun, for keeping me warm. Goes on. I plant the little holes for the seeds, and the little tiny seeds I'm dropping in for my broccoli. And I say to the seeds, oh, I know it's late, but I really am so happy that you're here with me and my family, and that you're going to, that you're giving us the gift of life when we eat you. And I'm so grateful to the earth for taking care of you and the little worms. And I hope that you grow big and strong. I'm sorry that I'm planting you late. I know that it's a little late, but I hope that you will grow and catch up. I know that I am giving you life, and that in turn you will give me life. And I thank you for this. And I'm thankful that I have this blessing to be able to plant this food as so many others don't. And I'm just touching the earth. Yep. That's the way I talk.
It's a great, I think it's a great way of connection also. It's really good. Yeah.
So really, when I'm doing anything, it's like talking to yourself. You're just speaking out loud how you really have from your heart. I'm so thankful and grateful. And when you listen to the spiritual tools, you'll start to do what many people have done. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Say it three times. Body, mind, and spirit. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And putting that together. And really, that is how I connect. And there are so many ways that I connect with nature. And I don't have to be in nature to connect with nature. It is helpful to be surrounded by trees. But we can do just about anything we want with our minds. One of the most powerful stories that I just recently started to share in the last couple of years, and that I had within the last couple of years, is a very, very powerful story about traveling through the earth. Okay? And I'll make the long story super short, and it's about really how powerful we are and how the earth is there for us, with us, okay? There's a couple of stories. One of them was I was recently in Brazil, and I saw a tree that was just profoundly beautiful with the roots all showing, and there was cradles, there was areas that were just like cradles, womb cradles, and I was like, wow. I walked up to the tree, I took my shoes off, and I just laid with the tree. I didn't think, I didn't try to take anything from it. We're always trying to take everything from nature. Stop that. Stop, stop, stop. Don't say, oh, I take all this energy, thank you for invigorating me. No, 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 no. You send it out. Thank you. Oh, thank you for being here. You're so beautiful. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Because then the trees and the earth and the flowers and the birds and the plants will say, oh, I thank you for noticing. And then they give something back and it's even 10 times more powerful than if you say, oh, I really need to ground myself. Give me that energy. No, it's about giving. Whatever you give, you get. Manifestation, give, you get. If you want to have money, give money away. Don't be afraid, just be thankful. Oh, here, you know, that's the way this sort of works almost. It's the same with nature. We're not there to take anything. We're there to give. We give our gratitude and our blessing and our you know, what we're feeling. Going back to the tree in Brazil, I had a profound vision of ceremony and by indigenous people, and I had a profound vision about it being the feminine, the tree of the feminine, and how it helped to, it connected in through the roots to all of the other feminine areas on the planet, and it was a very, very profound experience. And then I stood up to my friend that I was with said, oh, I took some pictures of you in the tree. And I was like, oh, okay. And she said to me, oh, by the way, the indigenous people come here and they do ceremony because this is the tree of the feminine. I have this happen to me often, where I'll go somewhere and I'll have the vision and I'll have the connection of what is happening with that. And then it turns out that people will tell me later, oh, yeah, this is the river of the women. This is the river of the feminine. Meanwhile, the second that I touched the water, it had spoken to me and said, I am the river of the feminine. Come to where I am at the top, and I will share more with you. You must come. The next morning, the guy came with mules. This was in Colombia, with mules, and took us to a waterfall at the top of this river. And as we're just about at the top, he says, oh, this is the river of the feminine and the women and the da-da-da-da-da. So how do I interact with nature? Another time I was in Colombia and I heard a booming voice that said, this is the entrance. You must ask permission. So I stopped on this trail and I took my shoes off. And I approached the next few steps with humility and my head down. And I opened myself and I said, I thank you for the gift of being here. I thank you from my heart. I ask you with humility if I may pass or if I may enter. And then I had yes. And then the guy, who is with, came back and said, oh, this is the spot where you're supposed to ask for to come in. I was like, okay. They said, it's right here. And I was like, okay. So at that point I got on my hands and knees and I bowed to the spot. And I said, I once again, I have been instructed to ask again for your permission, so I am doing so with humility. I open my heart to you and allow you to know my heart, to know my mind, to know who I am. I am here in service to you. And then I received a very profound message back, which is sacred to me, and I will leave with myself only. But it was very profound. And I felt this energy move through me that brought tears to my eyes. And to this day, even as I share this story, I feel that and that connection. If you walk away today from listening, from allowing this time for the opportunity for me to share with you my experiences and my thoughts, I hope that you walk away knowing that this is not complicated, that this is a profound respect for self and for others and for life. And start talking out loud, because it's about us. Not around other people, because they'll think you're crazy. But certainly for yourself. And so these are the profound... there are so many for me. They happen often. They happen... If I'm open to it, it will happen every day. If I allow it, it will happen. I used to say 15 years ago, I used to say, I am the only person I know who you could put me into a locked room and I could come out with the most profound stories that you've ever heard.
Yeah.
Because we have to allow ourselves to be open to it. So connecting with nature is not about grounding and taking, it's about... Every place that I travel, I take my hand and I put my hand on the earth and I say,
I say something along the lines of, I am here, it's Miriam. I thank you for allowing me to be here. I want to thank you for allowing us to be here. And please, I ask for your forgiveness. I ask for your forgiveness on behalf of humanity. And know that there are many of us all over the earth who are working very hard to have a balanced world and to restore your nature. Please give up and give us time. I've done this all over, every single place I've traveled. I ask people that travel to different places to please touch the earth for me and say, give the earth a message. Say, from my heart to your heart on the earth, I send you love and gratitude. And please forgive us for what we are doing. There are many of us working to restore the balance. And thank you, thank you, thank you. It is more about gratitude and being respectful than what we want. Because you know what I want? I want a vacation. Okay? Yeah. That's so serious. After vacation, I want to have a car. I want lots of things. I want lots of things. I want to have, you know, I'm always wanting to have more connection because that's what the evolution is for everyone. But the reality is that it's not what we want, it's what do we need in the moment and what do we have access to. And we always have access to ourselves. We always have access to ourselves. So the Spiritual Tools Seminar talks about having that access to self and how simply acknowledging the nature and saying thank you to it. A great reward because there's the mirroring that happens. So that was a big question. That was a big question. Hopefully that was.
Mira, I can't let go. I have to ask you. You were briefly talking about this earlier, but can you say? I think you have given visions about our possible future on both sides, negative and positive. And can you say, if it's possible, in short terms, where we're heading and what kind of possibilities is there and what we can do to make the best outcome for everyone, for the greater good?
Well, the original vision that was shared with me that was so traumatic was the destruction of the earth. And it was horrific because there was no water, there was no food, people were starving, there was, it was hell. It was living hell. It was horrific. It was just horrific. And that was the worst. And then the utopia was a world that was, you know, mindful of the balance of nature and life as human beings and what we had to do in order to care for the water and the earth and the air in order for us to continue to live, okay? And there was definitely a spiritual component in that in order to get us to the utopian world. I have said and maintained that we are, you know, when people said, oh, it's all about 2012. No, it wasn't all about 2012. That was ridiculous, book-selling, mind. It was all propaganda, okay? That prophecy, I'm not Mayan, and I don't speak on behalf of the Mayans, but I can tell you that prophecy is very misinterpreted and not fully interpreted to the public. There has been a time, a window of time, where a massive awakening of humanity has been taking place, and we are still in that time, and it's building more and more all as we move through
time and space. There is a critical point, tipping point, and we are in that short-term tipping point. So whatever happens within the next year or two will determine the fate of the world. That's where we are.
Interesting.
Are we leaning more towards destruction? No. That is not where we are. We are leaning more towards the world going on and building the utopia. Now, that is not going to happen even in our lifetime. I guarantee it. But from everything I know, because for almost 30 years, these beings have talked to me about, they told me the possible futures and what was going to happen. And they told me all of this information. You know, from everything that they've ever said, they've never proven to be wrong with me. Not once. Not with the information that they've shared from back then. Now, so what I can say with confidence is that, yes, that we are moving towards that very, that rebalancing of the masculine and the feminine, of the nature and production, of our education and our spirit. All the things are going to be coming into balance. But in a year, 2 years, will be the determining factor. Now, if you haven't seen Mary Delicato saying, it's all done, I'm offline, I'm out, go and live your life to the fullest, because guess what? It's done, we're over, there's destruction coming, and we're over. And until you see that, there is this pathway that we are leaning towards, especially right now with some things that are happening, that are about the awakening of humanity as a whole. We're very fortunate to be living in this time. So rather than focusing on what the negative is, we just have to focus on ourselves and then trying to be mindful as much as possible about nature. Plant a garden. Don't become such a consumer that you're becoming a super waster of things and this type of thing.
Cool, yeah. Great.
I don't know if the time is...
If anybody is... And also, Han, for example.
We are gathering all the emails, Miriam, and we're really, really grateful for letting us take part of the spiritual tool seminar, and of course also the Dream Group webinar and your book, and we're going to share that. So I'll already share the links for the book and the webinar. And it's been, I think we can talk for hours because it's so interesting the things you say, and but you have also covered a lot of what we wondered about, so it's an honor.
Can't thank you enough, Miriam. Really, can't thank you enough. And you've been just amazing. As I said, you keep having this talk ongoing, and you know. So yes, you've covered everything and more. And I can't thank you enough. You're a very, very beautiful soul.
And thank you.
Thank you so much for what you're doing. And you know, by inspiring us and to do our work and to go on and just, you know, do the right thing, I think it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. I'm very inspired. And I think everyone, yeah, they know.
Well, I love to connect with people, and having this kind of a format where I can actually interact a little bit really makes it rather than just standing and speaking, and I find that challenging sometimes.
Yeah.
Maybe we can, you know, do it again. Maybe I'll get to even come there.
You should come, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that. So you should come in person. That would be very interesting. I think they would like love to have you also.
Yeah.
So yes,
yeah. And you know, lastly, I think that it seems to me that the group is more focused on the spiritual aspects of ufology.
Absolutely, yeah.
And that, of course, is my focus. We can talk about so many other things, but the spiritual aspect is the most important part because it's changing our world and society.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And just for those who are interested, on my website, because you'll have the Dream World webinar, which is very interesting, very interesting. There is also, like you said, spiritual tools, three parts, must listen to in order, all three parts. The last part is mind-boggling, we'll put it all together. We also have the book, and then on my video page, there's a, on my YouTube channel, there's a YouTube video for the Divine Brain, okay? And it's a two-part, 2 hours long. And if you're really interested in how to get your brain to connect with the spirit, that two parts, you have to listen to both hours to get the full effect. There's that, there's the Divine Brain on my YouTube channel, and it's really, really, really interesting. So I look forward to the next time that I'm with the group, and it's been really a pleasure and an honor. And I love looking at the people in the back. And we will see you another time, because now I feel the connection through my heart and my spirit, and I thank you all very much. Really.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, take care. Thank you. Bye-bye.